Welcome back to the Roundtable. Brian Broom is a poet and screenwriter and K. Leroy Irvis Fellow and instructor in the writing program at the University of Pittsburgh. He's been a finalist in the Moth Storytelling Competition and won the grand prize in Carnegie Mellon University's Martin Luther King Writing Awards. His debut memoir, Punch Me Up to the Gods, is available today. It begins in his early years, growing up in Ohio as a dark-skinned black boy harboring crushes on other boys. The book is framed around Gwendolyn Brooks' poem, We Real Cool, and it is earning rave reviews. Joe Donahue spoke with Brian Broom and began by asking him what made him want to tell his story.
No, I didn't actually want to tell it. It kind of happened by accident, really. I ended up going to rehab, drug and alcohol rehab. And when I was there, I had a problem with my roommate who just really snored very loudly. And so I just stayed up nights, and I started writing, and I just started writing these stories about, why I thought I ended up in rehab. And so that's where the process began, just me writing these stories. And, when I got out, I started doing local things around Pittsburgh, like, spoken word shows and doing the Moth and things like that. And a woman came up to me and asked if she could be my agent. Which was, I didn't have any idea what that meant. But she ended up asking me, like, what kind of writing do you have? I said, I have all these stories laying around about, growing up and et cetera. She read them and she pitched them to Houghton Mifflin and they decided this is a memoir. So that's how the story came to be. So I didn't start out wanting to write a book. It just kind of happened that way.
You tell about the story of going from Ohio to Pittsburgh, even Paris, and your struggles with race, sexuality, addiction, and recovery, which you mentioned a moment ago. Obviously, that's a lot to deal with in any life, especially in a very young life. Give us a sense of the starting place of those early days in Ohio and what struck you then looking back as you wrote the book.
When I was growing up in Ohio, I didn't, when you're young, like the place where you're living is the whole world, so high school is your whole world, middle school, elementary school is your whole world. And I didn't recognize at the time that I was growing up inside of a racist bubble, the town where I was from, as the economic situation got worse there, the town became more racist. When I look back now at some of the things that happened, I'm really astounded by how racist, the town was, when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s. So when I look back at it, I'm pretty grateful that I came through it, but I also recognize why, I had some troubles, growing up, with regard to just really self-loathing. Like I hated myself. And that of course led to drug and alcohol abuse. And so, when I look back at it, I'm just grateful that I've come through it. And that's kind of what the book is about. It's one of the major themes of the book, I think.
You write a lot about this idea of toxic masculinity and the treatment of women, of black women, that you say you leaned on throughout your life as a way, and you really start the book off with a story that you tell, of a way to divert what you know or are learning about your sexuality.
Yeah, I think, masculinity is one thing. When that behavior becomes toxic, it's quite another, because the toxic version of masculinity is one wherein you have to be constantly proving that you're more powerful than somebody else and that you have power over somebody else and that you have dominion over somebody else. I feel that I've leaned on black women my whole life in order to counsel me, in order, in some cases, to make me feel like a man when I didn't feel like a man, which sounds odd coming from a gay man, but I have done that before. And, you can't have that relationship. You can't have masculinity without somebody you feel is feminine. And, oftentimes we conflate masculinity with power and femininity with weakness. So that's kind of one of the things that I wanted to tackle in the book and talk about. Again, masculinity is not an issue. There are traditional masculine values, such as, taking care of your family and being emotional support, but women have those traits as well. So we have to really start having a conversation about what masculinity mm-hmm. is supposed to mean. And when I was growing up, it was supposed to mean that you were dominant over women, and that you were dominant over every other man, you know, in, that you could see.
You write, going back to, I believe, 1982, "My family doesn't do things together anymore since my father lost his job and started acting weird. We barely speak to each other. The house feels funny to me, like a place I just go to sleep and eat. My mother is always tired from work, and my brother and sister and me aren't friends anymore. I'm not sure when this happened, but it feels like there are a lot of secrets in my house." That is a very isolating way to feel.
Yeah. Before my father was laid off, before the steel mills in Ohio started closing, we did kind of feel like a family, you know, to me. Obviously, I was very young, but we did things together. But after my father lost his job, I think he felt like he lost his role in the household, and he didn't know what else to do. He lost that masculine edge, I think, in his mind, and he just sort of disappeared into the wood paneling of our house. He was bitter, he was angry. Later on, I found out that, you know, he was sad, you know, he was probably anxious, and we just all started to drift apart. My sister started getting into her own thing, my brother his, and my mother had to go to work, so she was working all the time, and my father was just kind of in a sort of bitter world of his own. And then there was me, you know, the youngest, and I didn't really know what to do with myself. So I decided that I was on my own. And that's also kind of what the book is about, too, just deciding that, you know, I'm unloved, and therefore, you know, I'm just going to go live my life. And I disassociated myself from my family for a long time. And the drugs and alcohol didn't help that at all.
But they were a way for you to give yourself an anesthetic to what was happening, right? So you wouldn't feel that pain.
Yes, absolutely. You know, As I said, I hated myself. I hated who I was. I hated where I was from. I hated that I was black. I hated that I was gay. You know, when you're drunk, you can't feel any of that stuff.
Yeah.
You can't feel shame. You can't feel anxiety, which I still suffer with. So I think I made it my goal to just be high all the time. And I pretty much succeeded every day.
You write about this, but your college roommates had a lot to do as far as bringing you out of the closet. What was that like, and were you ultimately ready for that?
I wasn't ready for that. I had joined a campus gay and lesbian group just because I wanted to meet people. And as soon as I did that, you know, I was undone by my roommates. I wasn't ready for everybody to know. I was still ashamed of it, even though I had gotten up the gumption to go to this meeting of gay and lesbian task force in Akron. But I didn't want anybody to know. So there was still a deep shame involved. And they basically... They called me to the carpet, and I wasn't ready to handle it.
What was it like then to go back to Ohio and kind of deal with this and you know, to wallow in what you were dealing with at that time before you decide where you're going to go to next?
I was deeply, deeply depressed. You know, I didn't know it at the time. You know, I didn't really know from depression, you know, but... I recognize now that I was deeply depressed. I was, you know, really not prepared to go on another day. I had constant suicidal ideation. And, you know, my mother was worried about me. And I was worried about me. I didn't know what to do. And so the only thing I could think of was I got to get as far away as I possibly can before I bring shame to my mother, before I bring shame to my family. Unfortunately, I could only afford to go as far as Pittsburgh, but I definitely knew that I had to get away, and it further isolated me from my family when I left.
There's a point that you make that you say that black gay people are some of the strongest people because you're getting it from both sides. You're getting the racism of the general public. You're getting homophobia from black people as well as the general public. And it's as if the whole world is telling you that you should not exist the way you are.
Yeah. I still feel that way sometimes, you know. When black people are homophobic, I don't, you know, it feels different to me than when the general public is homophobic. I feel, you know, it feels like if your own people, so to speak, don't want you, then where do you go? You know, and that's a very isolating feeling. You know, you don't feel like you have a community. You don't feel like there's anywhere that you belong. I didn't have a real relationship with my family at that time. And so I just turned to the bottle and I turned to drugs. And that was my salvation. You know, I would go to these bars and, you know, get drunk and feel like I had friends all around me. You know, it's easy to do that when you're drunk. Everybody's your friend. So, yeah, it definitely had an effect on me. Just feeling that you're between, you know, Scylla and Charybdis, and, you know, and you feel like you're getting it from both sides.
Brian Broom is our guest. The name of the book is Punch Me Up to the Gods, a memoir. So there is a Gwendolyn Brooks poem, We Real Cool. This is structured around that poem. Talk a little bit about that and how you used it as the skeleton for these stories.
Sure. I discovered that poem late in life. It's been around since 1960. And when I read it, I was amazed. It's a really beautiful poem. You know, rhythmically, it's fantastic. But when I read the words, to me, they seemed like Ms. Brooks was talking about black masculinity. The story behind the poem is that she was walking down the street one day. She looked into a pool hall and she saw seven boys inside the pool hall engaging in very sort of manly behavior, you know. And she wondered what they thought of themselves. And when I read the poem, I thought, you know, what did I think of myself at that age, you know? And as I read the lines, each line sort of corresponded with a story or stories in my life. And I thought, this is a treatise, you know, a little treatise on black masculinity, she wrote in these few lines. And that's when I decided I'm going to hang my stories off this poem. Then I continued to read about the poem, and I saw that Bell Hooks, the great Bell Hooks, also saw this connection. She wrote a book called We Real Cool, Black Men and Masculinity, which I tried to read. But Bell Hooks is really, really smart, and I'm not that smart at all. Like, I could not, you know, the writing was so dense and like intellectual, and I got some points out of it that she was making. But I thought, well, you know, I'm not an intellectual. Like, I'm going to just write stories about these lines, and that's how that came to be. The people at the Gwendolyn Brooks Foundation were really, really nice, and they let me use the poem. And that's how the book came to hang off of those lines.
We were talking a moment ago about the feelings that you often have and how you're looked at by others. And you said, I still feel like that. Although you've come such a long way, although it never does leave you, does it?
The feeling of being, you know,
isolated
or
an outsider.
It never does. No, it never does. And I, you know, I've managed over the course of my life to, you know, assemble a pretty cool group of friends. But there are times when I think, God, I wonder what it would be like to be quote unquote normal, you know?
Brian? What does that look like?
I don't know.
What the hell's that?
About it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it exists anywhere. You know, I fantasize about it in my mind. What would it be like to, you know, have a wife and kids and have a normal life? But, you know, no life is free of feeling lonely sometimes. No life is free of feeling like a freak sometimes. No life is free of just, you know, really not liking yourself that much sometimes. So, in the end, that's just a fantasy. I know. I am me. As time goes on, I get more and more comfortable with just being me, you know. And here I am now, squarely in middle age, you know, still wrestling with these issues. But again, I think it's not just me. And it's everybody who tackles these issues on a daily basis.
Did you think sobriety would bring change to those issues?
Well, sobriety has certainly brought change. You know, I'm not in a gutter somewhere with a bottle of whiskey, but I thought that, you know, getting it together in terms of being sober would be, there are fewer problems, right? But the same problems that I wrestled with when I was drunk, I wrestle with now, only I don't have, you know, booze as a crutch. You know, I have to actually sit with my bad feelings. And yes, I thought my problems would go away magically once I got sober. Some of them did, you know, but, you know, the main ones are still there. It's just a matter, the difference is how I deal with them. So sobriety, you know, fixes some things, but it doesn't fix everything. And I was actually pretty shocked by that.
You now teach writing at Pitt. Does writing, this sounds somewhat cliche, so I apologize for it, but does writing help in that, in dealing with what you used to use, how you used to use booze, that now you can use words to describe your feelings and thoughts?
Writing brings a new kind of stress into your life. But,
well, there's,
you know,
that too, isn't there? Sure.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a famous quote where, so I don't know who said it, but he said, you know, I hate writing, but I love having written. And that's how I feel about it. You know, after I'm done, you know, I feel pretty good about it. It helps alleviate a little bit the, you know, the anxiety of life and the anxiety of these memories that I have that are not great, you know. But I think what helps the most is just, you know, something that I learned in rehab was just take a moment to just be grateful every day, you know, for what you do have. And I seriously do that every day. Just be, you know, you have a lot. You have a lot more than you recognize on a daily basis. We're all running around and doing things and, you know, just take a moment to just be thankful. And that actually works for me. Writing is just, I mean, good Lord, it's so, ugh, it's terrible.
It's interesting, you know, that quote of I hate to write, but I love having written was attributed to Dorothy Parker, and someone who also had a lot of issues, such as you have dealt with. That's a common, I think, fairly common as well. Is it, when you look at it now in the work, because I don't, I mean, it's easy to talk about the story, and your story is incredible, and this book is beautiful, and you tell it so in such a gorgeous way. But I would like to focus for a moment on the work itself. This is a beautiful book that you've put together, and I assume that it seems to me that if you write this, you have to have your shit together. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like you got to be kind of focused.
You have to be focused, and, like, you know, when I write, I try to make sure that there's just nothing around to distract me. You know, I write on the bus a lot. Well, actually, I guess that flies in the face of nothing around to distract me. Like, when I start writing, I write on the bus. I find it a great source of, like, stories, and I eavesdrop on people's conversations. But whenever I sit down to write, it has to be completely quiet, you know. And I have to really, really focus. As far as having my together, I don't know. You know, it's definitely more together than it was, right? But I'm still, you know, horribly flawed person that I'm. And you know, I think the drive is that, you know, writing makes me. When I write, I feel more self-reflective, and that helps me to be a better person. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely am not a person who can, you know, say, okay, I'm going to sit down at 10 a.m. and write until 2 p.m. every day. No, that doesn't happen. Like, you know, I'm a procrastinator. I'm a pantser, as they say. I write by the seat of my pants. So I don't know that anything's really changed that much, except that now I know, you know, that I am a writer, and, like, that's my job, and that's what I should be doing.
Do you feel happy?
Some days. Somebody else asked me this recently, and it wasn't somebody who was interviewing me. It was a friend of mine. And she said, "Are you happy?" And I was like, "No, I'm a writer. We're not happy people." Like, God, what do you think this is? Like, I feel happy some days. I think that by nature, I'm not a demonstrably happy person. Like, yeah. I'm not a jump up and downer. I'm usually pretty somber, pretty staid. But there are days when I can't help but, I can't fight the smile that's coming across my face.
I don't even mean this in a relationship sense, but have you found love?
No. Oh, you mean relationship sense?
No, I mean, I said not in that sense. I mean, just have you found, well, I didn't want to get personal, but I was just saying, have you found, besides the relationship aspect, have you found love? Have you found that blanket that you can curl yourself up in?
I think I have really, really great friends. And, I have issues around being lovable. So for me to find love would mean that I felt like I was deserving of it. And I'm still working on that. I have people in my life who I know love me, right? I have to know that because of things that they've done for me and things that they've said and times that we've spent together. But I think I have, but I have my troubles recognizing it sometimes. If that makes any sense.
It does make sense. It makes perfect sense. Does therapy help?
Therapy does help. My therapist, I have a pretty unrestrained therapist who just says, "You're crazy."
Oh, they're the best kind. They're the best kind. The ones that literally call you on it. They're good. Yeah.
Literally uses the word crazy, in a therapy session. I'm like, you're not supposed to do that, are you? But literally uses the word crazy. Yes, therapy helps. It helps you gain a little bit of perspective. I mean, you get in your own head and you start bouncing off the walls in there and, you will literally drive yourself crazy. So yes, therapy helps. A person on the outside who is not connected to your life in any way doesn't want anything from you other than for you to get, more healthy emotionally. Yes, it helps a great deal. And I am crazy. I accept it. I accept that title.
Well, you are also a beautiful writer. And the new book is Punch Me Up to the Gods, a memoir by Brian Broom. The book is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Brian, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I wish you all the luck in the world. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Great time. I had a great time.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Punch Me Up to the Gods, a memoir by Brian Broom. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.